Welcome to episode 14 of Living in Recovery, a podcast devoted to sharing the stories of fellow CBP employees who are living in recovery with an addiction. The focus of this podcast is to share the experiences of those who have struggled with alcohol or drugs in the hopes of breaking the stigma that's often associated with addiction. Also, the goal of this podcast is to stimulate hope amongst those who might be struggling but are discouraged or intimidated by the prospect of seeking help. As a disclaimer, the words expressed in this podcast are based on personal experiences alone and are not meant to be taken as medical advice or to promote one method of treatment. Today, Brandon shares his recovery experience and how treatment helped him come to terms with his addiction. Now Brandon discusses what works in his approach to recovery. Brandon, when did you first know you had a problem?
Well, that's definitely an interesting question. I remember distinctly the first time of the joy of being drunk and not having a care. But when I first knew I had a problem, I think back in 2012, I'll get specific. I've been in for 3 years at that moment, moved into another state, another border, didn't know anyone, but I didn't know what shift work was. So not knowing anyone, I would go to work, come home, and I'd jump online. I'd jump online and I'd play video games, talk with friends back home playing video games. And of course we would drink during that, you know, old high school, college buddies. And it was fun. The scariness of being by yourself, you know, being a young adult, actually have a career, have a job, responsibility. It was fun. It was fun. I say it was extremely fun starting out. And then shift work came into play. This was back when every month we would change shifts. And so 3 years of doing this shift work. And I think when it dawned on me is I remember one day, 2012, midnight shift, I get out in the morning and I find myself drinking more and more to get that joy, to get that happiness feeling. And I remember, wow, this is 9 o'clock in the morning and I'm hammered. I'm starting to get blackout hammered, and I remember calling. This is peer support started becoming a bigger deal, and a lot more agents joined peer support. I remember calling a guy, and someone I've had long conversations with. He was older, older gentleman, and he was always kind to me. And so, you know what? I've been drinking a lot. What should I do? And I remember him saying, "I'll call you right back." I'm like, "All right." Calls me back, and goes, "Have you ever thought about doing Alcoholics Anonymous?" I was like, "No, I'm not an alcoholic. I think, you know, that is a problem." But this question kind of goes in three parts for me. I end up importing my wife from back home. I met her through online and I end up getting married and she moved down. And this is, let's fast forward to 2016-17. And she moved in and she had, I call her my bonus daughter, but she had a baby girl. And you know, it's now responsibility kicked up a notch. And I remember I'm on a day shift now. I joined a different branch of the organization and it was Monday through Friday. And I would come home, we'd do dinner and stuff. And then here I go right to online computer systems, games. And I would have a couple drinks. I'm with my buddies. And at this moment, it was every work day when I got home, took care of what I had to take care of as a husband and dad. That I would get on this council and drink. Everyone's in bed. And the wife at the time told me she don't like it. I'm like, "All right, I won't do it then." I mean, who are you to tell me that though? I got everything done. And so I'd go 5 days. I'd go 10 days. But I'd go right back and I'd drink like that for 3 months. And then I'd go again and I'd go 20 days. Right then and there, if I had a problem, it kind of solidified more that I can't go long without doing it because I was thinking about it. I wanted to have fun. I wanted to feel good. Something about my life I wasn't liking, and I didn't know it at the time. Now, when the third phase of having a problem, I'm probably going to talk about it a little bit more in this podcast, but there came a time where I bounced around different states, different sectors, different jobs, that it became an everyday thing and it covered a lot of emotion to a point of the deepest, darkest hell that someone can go through. So I'll talk about that third issue there when I knew I had a problem later on in this podcast because it's very, very significant.
That does bring me to my next question. When you realized there was an issue, what thoughts and feelings were going through your head?
Awesome. Awesome question. So that first phase, 2012, when I felt that I might, you know, I'm drinking too much, the thoughts and feelings were, this is daylight. I'm a federal agent. I protect America. I'm there to protect people, defend people. Why am I drinking during the daylight hours? So I was kind of mad at myself for that. Then let's fast forward to 2016, 2017, when my wife at the time told me that I'm drinking too much. I got angry. Angry the first time, angry the second time. I am going to work. I am making money. I'm paying the bills. I am cooking dinner. I'm putting the kid to bed. I am checking off everything that a man, a husband, a dad needs to do. So why can't I have that little small time to feel happy, to be for myself? And I remember being angry about it. Angry at her. Angry at my daughter. Not angry so much as I'm mad at them, but angry to the fact of I can't have my time. And then the thoughts and feelings. So I'm going to go right to that third time. The thoughts and feelings, my drinking destroyed my body. It was destroying my relationship, destroyed my body. I lived in a hospital. My body shut down at one point. This was about 4 years ago. I got pancreatitis. Doctor says you need to stop drinking or you could die. What do you know? You're a doctor. You don't know, right? So I pushed the envelope. I kept going because at this moment, my relationship was done. My wife was sticking with me just because I had a paycheck at this moment, and she was looking for a way out. So my drinking, like all the emotions that are coming out, this is before I knew what emotions were, but that anger inside of watching the world crash around me, my drinking affected my work now, coming in disgruntled, angry, constantly angry. I was drinking on my days off. The first thing I would do, I could wake up at 4 a.m. I'm going to that bottle because I was so angry, so sad, so mad at myself that the only time I felt good is when I slept, right? And this is before I even know that drinking, when I blacked out, I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't getting the REM sleep. I was awake for years. I was awake for 10 years. I was awake. My body was so tired. So through this drinking, I would wake up, drink just to pass out. Just to get up a few hours later, I'm awake, angry again, sad again. I drank again. And the thoughts and feelings that I got, it came to a moment where I knew I had a problem. I'm living the problem. I tried stopping. I can't stop. Well, it's the only way that someone in my position knows how to stop something permanently. And it's the gun. The morning I woke up and I got hammered and I'm crying and I'm like, I am so done being so, so angry that I go to my gun safe. You know, I was responsible. I kept my guns in a safe right down there in the basement. I remember grabbing my duty pistol. I'm like, you know what? This is it. I'm done. I'm finally freaking done. And that words can't describe what someone goes through during that darkest time because suicide happens in a fraction of a second. Okay, that decision to do it, then doing it happens a fraction of a second. I was going to do it. And something happened. I call it a gift of despair. G-O-D, God. And those feelings of being the scaredest I've ever been in my lifetime awoke me. I woke right there. That was 1,150 days ago. That moment happened. I had a son, and the thought of my best friend, my son, going to grow up without his best friend scared me. My daughter, who was high school at the time, she would have been the one that came home and found me. I would have destroyed her life forever, right? So that moment, I called the wife. I call her the wife. Call my wife. It's a little standing joke saying the wife, but I called her and I said, you know what? This is what I did. This is what I was about to do. I want help. Come home. come home, call my boss, which is, that's going to be a follow-up in another question. Call him, tell him exactly what I am, tell him exactly what I was about to do. So those feelings, hopeless.
So that's when you decided to get help?
Yes. At that moment right there, I'll never look back. It's, to this day, made me who I am. That moment. Yeah. That moment right there, when I had that gift of despair, when God came in my life, for the first time, I didn't care. I didn't care about my job. My job used to define who I was. I think at that moment, I'm going to start defining who I am, what my job is, right? So yeah, at that moment, I was ready to leave Board Joe. I was ready to leave. So much so, I was ready to go to a rehab center, go to a treatment center. For the first time in my life, it was me that I was focusing on. I don't have to take care of a job. I don't have to take care of a family. I want to fix me. For the first time, that I call it onion layers. When I go around talking and doing resiliency trainings and what have you, I talk about emotions, and we put onion layers over whatever pain we're suffering. And everyone in this agency, we're the strong silent type, that culture barrier that we talk about, the fear of losing badge and gun, losing our identity. Going back, so that fear of losing the badge, losing the gun, didn't care, gone. I wanted to focus on me. I needed to fix myself because guess what? I love myself. And I found at that moment, I love myself so much more that I did not want to kill myself. I wanted to live. I wanted to live. So yeah, I wanted to go to rehab center. I didn't care about the stigma. I didn't care about the barrier. At this moment, I knew my wife was going to divorce me. I knew that. I did not care at that moment. Nothing mattered more than me focusing on me at that very moment. So yeah, that's when I decided to go to rehab, go get treatment.
And how was that experience going to treatment?
Well, I got some great stories on that one. That was treatment centers, rehab centers. They are a school, a college for recovery. So you go in there and I'll talk about the first thing. That moment, that day, I called my wife. She came home, made that call to work. We jumped on my insurance and we started making phone calls, started digging. And I got into a treatment center a week from that moment. I still had to go to the hospital because my necrotizing pancreatitis, which is the worst of them. Not many people know that. I was told I had 7 days to live. That's a tough one. So I'm going to kind of rewind a little bit. I know we're going to have to edit this part, but when I got sent to a hospital one time with pancreatitis, and then I got out and it kept getting worse, and the doctor says, you keep drinking, it's going to kill. If you keep drinking, it's going to kill you. And what do you know, right? So I go in and out of the hospital, but one morning it got so bad that I couldn't walk, I couldn't move, and my wife didn't care. She was angry that I'm going back to the hospital, but something happened. My pancreas grew to about 15 times its normal size. It was flooding my gastro system with bile. Your body, your intestines are not designed to have that. I was told I had 7 days to live. I got septic. My stomach looked like I was pregnant. I was dying. And I miraculously, I got out. I started healing. I don't have a pancreas anymore. I got half my stomach taken out. I survived that, right? So I get out and I'm in so much pain, right? Emotional pain. I'm destroyed still, but now I'm in physical pain. And that's when the good old painkillers, the benzos, I ate that like candy. I got addicted to benzos and I remember distinctly, what am I doing? I'm a federal agent. This is how meth heads are created. It's how people become addicted to heroin and meth, and no way. I'm going back to alcohol. The same substance that almost killed me, I'm going back because emotionally I'm destroying myself, right? I am lost. So when I woke up and suffering that emotional pain, that physical pain, I had nothing to numb to stop it all. So I would drink. And I remember drinking, and I drank so much that pain carried me and I could not stop no matter what. I could not stop. So I was going to kill myself. So That moment, that gift of despair, through all that pain that I was willing to stop, that moment that I called my wife and then we lined up for rehab center. I had to go back to the hospital because my body was shutting down again. I remember being in there, but something happened to me before I was going to go fly out to this rehab center. I'm sitting in the hospital, still in a lot of pain, physical pain, but something emotionally stopped. I wasn't fearing anything. I knew something was different. My body was going to heal out of this moment. At this moment, I had all my muscle deteriorated and I couldn't even do a push-up from my belly. I don't remember this. That I'm sitting in the hospital and I'll never forget. And I'm going to be talking about chain of command here soon in leadership, but I'll never forget. I won't say his last name, Raul. Shout out to Raul. You saved my life. Brought a book in, and it was his personal book, and he put it on my chest, right? And him and I have had some deep conversations. He knew I was struggling with something, didn't quite know how to talk about it, but he talked to me. He would walk with me. And he put a book on my chest, and his wife and kids are right there, too. And the book is Discipline Equals Freedom. And I read that sucker right then and there. Never again, never again will I be in pain. So when it came to a treatment center, I got out of the hospital, took that book with me, and I flew out there by myself. I got there. And that change that took, that moment, I was willing to do anything in this world for me. And I remember getting checked into this treatment center, and this lady taking my info, taking my vitals, and I just got out of the hospital, right? So whatever withdrawal I was going through, I was done. And she asked me, so how much anxiety are you going through right now on a scale of 1 to 10? I'm like, 0. She goes, what? Like, that's not normal. Like, lady, you don't understand. I already faced death twice in my life. I am here on my own accord. I want to get better. I have no fear whatsoever. I have no anxiety. None. I don't need any meds or anything like that. I am here for me. Let's get to work. I want to work right now. Discipline equals freedom. And then she goes, okay, I go pass on to, they're going through my stuff now. I brought a baggage and I got my deodorant. I got my toothpaste. And this is, I didn't know the depths I was in. I thought I was alone. Oh, so funny now looking back that I was never alone. They threw away my deodorant. I'm like, I'm not walking around this place without deodorant. Like, I'm not a hippie. I got to put stuff on. I got to smell good. Something. And they're like, there's alcohol in it. I'm like, there's alcohol and deodorant? And he goes, yeah. I'm like, people eat deodorant? He goes, yeah. I'm like, here I am thinking to myself, I ain't that bad. Ain't that crazy. Yeah, he's telling me about people took shots of rubbing alcohol, mouthwash. I'm like, you are kidding me. I don't even, that stuff hits the back of my throat. I'm going to gag. So yeah, all the way, I'm like, all right. Whatever, let's do this. I'm going to be walking around Matthew McConaughey style, smell like garbage. And I'll never forget, too. He goes, all right, we got to do a body check. Get naked. And I'm like, my pants are down at my ankles. Like, at this moment, I don't care. We're doing this. And he was like, looked at me shocked. I'm like, let's get to work. I'm ready to do this. And yeah, the whole squad cough and all that. I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this, federal agent. And Yeah, so I walk in, we walk out there. So a lot is happening right now, and I'm there to do work, right? I'm a federal agent. That's what we do. We do work, right? And so I walk in this hallway, and I start seeing the clientele. I'm like, oh, this is, what have I got myself into now? And then I'm walking the hall, and I'm like, I'm singing the hall. I'm eyeing everyone. I need to know who's a gangbanger in here. Who am I going to have to freaking knock out? They try something. And I look back, and the guy who took me in, who was talking with my wife at the time, getting everything lined up and getting insurances done, and he goes, you're in the right spot. I was like, I sure in the hell hope so. So I'm watching people, and I walk down the hall, and I see tattoos on the face, tattoos on the neck, and I kept walking down. I'm like, dude, I'm a federal agent. I ain't going to be here, man. Let's disregard this. We're done. And he goes, you're in the right spot. I'm like, dude, all right, 10-4, we're in the right spot. So that night, I'll never forget this. It's scary at the time, but it was, I look back and laugh. Right? I love this place. This place saved my life. I remember at nighttime, and I'm wide awake. I'm in the public room in the corner. I have everyone in front of me. There's no way in hell someone's going to walk behind me. And it's time for bed, mandatory bedtime. Grown-ass man told to go to bed. All right, let's do this. And I walked in my room, and there's a guy in the corner at the air conditioner, and he's got his hand up like he's got a cup in his hand. It's empty. And he's got a pencil, and he's chiseling away at this ice on this air conditioner. This boy is filling up an invisible cup, and he's pouring himself a drink. I'm like, no way in hell I'm sleeping tonight. I have a clicky pen, and wide awake at night, the whole night I was wide awake. I had this pen on my chest. I'm like, this guy gets up, tries something. I'm like, I'm surviving this night. That was a long night. The treatment center, the true Brandon, the person that I, deep down inside, the person I hated, the person I turned my back to, it was coming out. I was having full-on conversations with myself. And that treatment center, I was willing to do anything to be better, to better myself. Now, I jokingly say this, and for whatever works for you, do it. Don't stop, just do it. All right, you're getting better. Forget what other people say. I get jokes all the time. Training, resiliency trainings, doing what I do, sharing the story. Yeah, agents are agents, right? And they're going to be saying some smart comments. I don't care what they say. I am who I am. I got scars on my knuckles. I've been in down and dirty fights, life fights. It don't matter. All right, it don't matter what they say. All right, I am me and I love me. But I jokingly talk about willing to do everything. I don't get into hippie stuff. This Reiki, I was willing to do whatever. I have people rubbing my head and just rubbing over. And I tell you what, something came out of my all scene. I don't know what it was, but, you know, I was there to do work. Another thing there, they had this sound thing where they click bells and ringing. And there was about 10 of us in this room, and we're laying down, and they're doing it. And I'm like, this is some hippie stuff, but I'm doing it. I don't know. It's going to work. Something, right? And I remember I passed out within 2 seconds of being in that room. And it, like, 30 minutes later, I wake up, and someone was laughing at me and go, you were snoring. And I was so embarrassed. I'm very respectful. And that instructor, I pulled him aside. I'm like, I want to apologize right now. I am so sorry I fell asleep during your thing. Can I please do it again? And he was just smiling. He goes, for the first time in your life, in a long time, you slept. He goes, they got the job done. And I'm like, that hit me like a ton of bricks. I didn't. And it was a peaceful rest. I found myself in this treatment center sleeping. And, you know, I'm still have racing thoughts. I still have emotions. I'm still learning what those are and understanding them and how to deal with them. But when I fall asleep, I'm falling asleep. And it's, oh, I slept like a baby. It was awesome. What else? The treatment center. I started hitting the gym. And I talk about it. My muscles deteriorated, and I have a picture that my wife took when I got out of the hospital. We went to this like little zoo thing, and it's a Superman shirt, and my arms were toothpicks in it. My belly was still out because I still had a lot of fluid in my body for being septic. And so that Discipline Equals Freedom book, you know, it's Jocko. It's a Jocko book. So, you know, you got some lifting in there. And I remember telling myself, never again. Never again will I allow my body to shut down like that. Never again will my body be so weak. They have a little gym there, so I can't do a push-up for my belly, right? And they had a gym there, and I would hit it. I would hit it 2 times a day, and I am getting stronger and stronger. Heck, just this morning, I just repped 315 on the bench, and it's not bragging or anything, but discipline equals freedom. I love myself so much. I'm focused on me that I hit the gym. From that day on, and at the treatment center, I have people walking by, and they're starting to slowly, you know, know my story a little bit, and they see me working out in there, and I'm like, you know, I got a book for you. Changed my life. Read it. And that book got passed around. I had everyone sign it. I got 50 signatures in that book, and some of them I stay in touch with. Yeah, something happened in that treatment center. And I'm going to kind of fast forward to those that had the same feelings and thoughts I did about treatment center or seeking help. I can tell you what, as the duties that I do now, I'm a sector chaplain. I'm a sector resiliency coordinator or a care support coordinator. I'm not sure the name on that. It should be changed to resiliency coordinator, by the way. That I have taken agents to rehab centers. I have taken officers to rehab centers. I've taken SESs to rehab centers. I've taken people from all over different agencies to rehab centers. Special agents within OPR to rehab centers. This stuff happens to anyone. It does not discriminate. Addiction happens to anyone. And that's one thing that treatment center, it knocked me upside the head. I had other law enforcement personnel in this room. I had convicts. Those convicts saved my life. I had a lawyer in there. I had a doctor in my rehab center. And it happens to anyone. And that was a game changer. That was a game changer for me because I wasn't alone. And it don't matter where we're at in society, our skin color, our religious background. Yeah. Yeah, that college, I walked out of there. You know, I had a degree in living a happy life. I definitely segued all over the place on that question.
I love that so much. College of Recovery and a degree in living a happy life. What more could you want?
You know, today is the best day of my life. It's the only day that counts. And that's something that I grasp on is yesterday already happened, right? Tomorrow is not here yet. What we do today affects tomorrow. So why not today be the best day of our life? It's the only day that counts. And now I choose to make it the best day, no matter what. Our government shut down. We're not getting paid. I still love today. I'm still there for someone. Doing this podcast together. Someone out there, someone listening to this right now is going to grab a hold of this. Some sort of information. All our stories that are shared. That culture barrier. The reason I so freely talk about it, because we're, you know, those in law enforcement. The strong, silent type. We're all warriors. We're all protectors. We're all defenders. All right? We can still cry during the notebook. All right? We have emotions. Get it off your chest. Don't bury it onion layers upon onion layers. Because I tell you what, something under pressure and you keep adding to it, it's going to explode. And that's when scary stuff happens. So today is it. It's the only day that counts.
After you got your degree in happiness, in joy, what happened after that?
Oh, this, what happened after this? So this is interesting. So I'm going to do a shout out to sponsor Tom. Hi, buddy. I love you. You saved my life. So after treatment center, I get out. This still chasing and understanding that every day, each day that I'm alive is a day I have to learn. I have come to grips with emotion. I am. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic and addict. All right. So what happened after treatment center? I fly home, right? And that whole stigma, at this moment, people know where I've been. People who know me, they know where I've been. Right? They knew I was at a treatment center. So I get home from a treatment center. They know where, people know where I've been. I don't care. I don't care if work knows. So I was slated. I love this agency so much, and I'm going to do a shout-out to this agency. I had no hours of leave living in the hospital. This agency, she donated 240 hours to me to go get help. Someone came forward, not out of a consequence of an action, but I came forward. I said, I want help. I'm going to get help. I'm going to leave my family. This is me. No. You're going to stay in. We're not going to take your badge and gun. I'm going to stop right there. They gave me 240 hours of leave. Go get help. No questions asked. So I went to go do it. And I got back. And I showed up to work 2 days later, ready to go. And I'll never forget this. And this is why I love this agency, because it is growing. My boss looks at me and goes, you are here. gave me the biggest hug in the world. Let's go to work. And he treated me no different. He knew exactly what was happening. And I went to work. He put me to work and I was there. I was Brandon. And he told me the glow I have, the smile I have. He was impressed. He's not an alcoholic or an addict. He has no idea of what someone goes through on that. But he knows, he knew that whatever this was something he cannot, human beings are not capable of explaining what's happening. So I'm going to rewind because I do want to do point out this agency, it has grown so much. It understands that those that have courage, and the truest form of courage is admitting something is wrong with yourself. All right. I'm going to repeat that. The truest form of courage is admitting something's wrong with yourself. Our agency recognizes that. Okay. They recognize it to such a degree that those that come forward, not because they got in trouble or they did something bad, but came forward, I want help. The safe harbor policy, they are running with it. They are laying the way for someone to go out, get better. And they understand that these are true leaders. These are true protectors, defenders of this nation. They take that oath so serious that they admitted something's wrong and they sought help. Despite whatever negative stigma exists over it, they went to go do it. I tell you what, this agency does not frown upon someone going forward to go seeking help. I have promoted within my agency. I run a resiliency out of a sector. I'm a sector chaplain. These same people that paved way for me are the ones that are on my resume. They're the ones that are, someone calls, and I'll never forget this. When I applied to my first line for the supervisor position, I'll never forget. Shout out to Russell. Ask me a question. Russell, you saved my life. Thank you. Russell asked me, what is the hardest decision you ever made within your career, and what have you learned from it? And I just smiled. I'm like, all right, here we go. And I told him exactly what I told you all. And this boy is just writing down. I'm watching it. And you know what? I didn't care. I don't care if people know what I am because my actions dictate who I am. I'm the best agent, best supervisor, best dad, best husband. I'm the best version of myself because of coming forward, because of going to treatment center, because of living a recovery life. And this agency loves that. That man hired me right there. Okay. So I'm all over the place with this question, but I could talk all day on this. This is why this agency means so much to me. Why I have it tattooed on my body. All right. I live this oath. I am there. Shout out to Javi. Shout out to Miguel. Shout out to Raul again. You all saved my life. These are the truest leaders in our agency. Javi took that phone call from my wife, told everything. Javi's moved on. He promoted out of there, but he was still my leader, still my director. And he was like, he told my wife, whatever you need, I'm there. I'm going to make it happen. You need to notify his chain of command. Miguel is my chain of command. Miguel got that information. No judgment whatsoever. He did. There's policy and guidance you got to do by the book. He did that, but not, he didn't stop there. This man was a leader. This man called my wife and talked to me. We talked exactly what happened, and I'll never forget it. I showed up to work. Raul and Miguel, they call me in the office, and they're like, we're not taking your badge or gun, all right? You're going to get help. Do you want to leave your badge and gun with us? And of course, they're talking about suicide because I told them exactly what I did. And I was like, you know what? Yes, because I'm going to a treatment center, and where my gear is at, my highly sensitive gear, I don't want to worry about that. You're right. You know what? Here's my computer. Here's my badge and gun. Hold on to it. And he looks right at me and goes, it'll be here when you get back. 10-4, I love you. Leaders right there. That's what leaders are. So yeah, I gave my badge and gun, but I knew it was going to be right there when I got back. Oh, I totally forgot where I was at, but I'm going to keep going. Those men right there. Kimberly, shout out to you. You saved my life. She was a work peer, but she was there. This agency understands it. Because of those people, I knew how I was going to be a leader. I knew I was going to be there. I had no fear to talk about emotion. No fear. If you're going through a hard time, guess what? I am there. I am there. Just like these people were. I'm passing on what was so freely given to me. Yeah, I haven't looked back. I haven't looked back. Shoot, there's a lot more people out there that saved my life. Spencer, love you. You saved my life. Leaders like that. I model myself around those. Because these people created what leadership is. And this agency is there now. All right, I work on a collateral way of looking at things. So understand from the ground up, agents, officers, those that are in the field, they're the ones that are protecting America. And then the chain of command all the way and up, just make way for us to do our job, right? So finally, safe harbor. All these leaders I mentioned, they actually understand that if we focus on the agent, and not so much the agent, but his family, her family, if we put that as pedestal and they are good to go, everything else is collateral. The job will get done. Our nation will be secured. Through all that's what's happening in the news right now, they're going to get the job done. They're going to leave their families and do and protect America. They're going to get their job, and that's going to be and it's going to go good. It's going to go great. They actually understand that, and that's what I love about it, and that's why I continue to spread this message. I talk about it. I've been told I get hypervigilant at times. Yeah, this is my life. Now I'm serious about it. And why I talk about this, why I do all these resiliency trainings, why I go around. I am talking to Agent Brandon right now. I am telling that young man what life could be like. All right. And then I'm helping those out there. I've, through the course of my duties, I've heard some scary, scary stuff, but they're not alone. I always say this, and I swear my actions dictate whether I would or not. If you're in a hell, I will find you and I'll grab your hand and I'll show you the path I took to get out of that hell. No matter what, your family members, you, a complete stranger, I'll be there. I swear to you, I'll be there.
Brandon, what does recovery look like for you today?
That is a fun question. You can hear my dark times, the sadness in my voice, you know, reflecting on my past to the excitedness and the drive I have now. I'm just talking about this. Recovery looks like for me today. It changes daily. Thinking about sponsored time. When I got back out of treatment center, I came back to work. My detail was done. My headquarters detail was done. So I put in a list for five places, and none of those five places would take me. I didn't know if my past was out there. They're afraid to touch someone like me. So I was about to go down to Laredo, and someone made a phone call, and I don't know who it was to this day. Thank you, because you changed my life. I got sent to a state that I'd never been before, back to the line as an agent. And I got divorced. My wife was in Michigan and did not want to leave. My son, my 8-year-old son, and my bonus daughter stayed in Michigan. So I went to another state by myself. I got a divorce. I came here with a couch and a TV. Yeah, through all that, my sponsor, Tom, love you, saved my life, kept saying, this too shall pass. I was on such a spiritual growth that all that negative stuff that someone would call as a bad time, yeah, it was bad. It did not stop me, did not affect me, because I was alive. So going through that, and my life starting to change, I kept doing the next right thing. I promoted. I joined chaplaincy. I became a sector chaplain. All these great positive things, right, where someone would walk around that was in the lows of all that stuff I talked about to all this positive stuff's happening. This is what changed my life. My sponsor tells me during the good times, and I'm happy and I'm talking to him, and he goes, this too shall pass. And that knocked me upside the head pretty good, because I'm learning something new every day, and it finally dawned. It finally occurred to me what recovery looks like today. Today is today. The only thing I'm focusing on, through the good times and bad times, all I know is this too shall pass. I'm going to do the best I can at whatever I have to do, because tomorrow's a new day, and what I do today affects tomorrow. So that's what recovery looks like to this day. This too shall pass. But it's a great day. I'm going to make it.
Those are all my questions. Do you have anything else you want to add?
Yeah, let's let me look at some stuff I wrote down here. Because I could do this all day. I could talk about this recovery. Okay, here's a biggest challenge to my recovery was a question that I was looking at. And for those that go into recovery, they're young in it. I don't have any challenges to my recovery. I look at things a little different in my lifetime. And within the rooms, we're not supposed to say we're never going to drink again. We're never going to use again. I'll tell you, I'm not. I won't. To drink is to die. And I love my life so much. Unless you are one, unless you are suffering, unless you are an addict, other people will never know what is going on. For those out there that are they're on the edge, it's easier said than done. I know this. This, what we do, recovery, is the easiest, hardest thing you'll ever do in your lifetime. It's so simple. Truly, who cares what other people think? Okay? When it comes to this, you're going to hear guidance. If you got in trouble for drinking, if you got a DUI, if you did something where it requires a consequence, accept it. That could be the greatest gift of your life. If you think you're struggling, give me a call. Call me. I don't care where you're at in the United States. I will fly out there. Funded or not funded, I'll find a way and I'll take you. Go to a room. Go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Go to Narcotics Anonymous. Go to Al-Anon. Go somewhere. And I can tell you what, go in there. And so whatever worst thing you think you have ever done, I either have done it or you're about to hear stories of thousands of people out there, millions of people who have done it. And you're gonna hear joy. You're going to hear hope. You're going to hear happiness. You're going to hear sadness. But these people are alive. Your life can truly change. I was on the cusp of admitting to myself that I had a problem. It's people like Stephanie, people like Tim, people like Spencer, Javi, Raul, Miguel. Who cares what other people think? Go in there. Follow the guidance. Because there is people out there who are willing to listen, who have the sympathy, who have the empathy, who have been there, who've done it. Love yourself. Finally, for the first time in your life, love yourself. Stephanie, Tim, love you both. Thank you so much for what you're doing. You're saving lives.
It is truly an honor for both of us to be able to do this.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Living in Recovery. If you or someone you know needs help, reach out to the Employee Assistance Program to reach a licensed clinician at 1-800-755-7002. For additional resources related to the Alcohol and Substance Misuse Prevention Program, please visit the CBP Workforce Care Directorate page on CBPNet. You can also send questions directly to CBP Resiliency at cbp.dhs.gov.